If you, who make less than $250,000 a year, which includes 98% of small business owners, you will not see your taxes increase one single dime. Make less than $250,000 a year, which includes 98% of small business owners, you will not see your taxes increase one single dime. $250,000 a year, which includes 98% of small business owners, you will not see your taxes increase one single dime.
Liar in chief Barack Obama, once again, promising you that if you make a meager little middle class income, you won't see your taxes go up one single dime. Don't ask me what I want it for if you don't want to pay some more. You know, that sounds kind of like using the tax code to penalize or fine people for for behavior that is disapproved of. I guess you could do that if you had a system of taxation that allows the government to single people out based on the way they act or how much they make or what they have or... But who would ever want a tax system like that? We're here for an abbreviated version of the Fair Tax Show tonight. I'll only be here an hour tonight. We're already lighting up the phone lines tonight. We're going to go and take our first caller. It's Dave. You're on the air. Who's this? Hello? Hello, caller. Hello, caller. Okay, that caller's not there, so we'll just carry on. The fair tax, if you're just joining us for the first time, if you don't know what the fair tax is currently presented to you in the form of H.R. 25. That's House Resolution 25. It's been sitting dormant there for a decade. Ways and Means Chairman Dave Camp reportedly has told folks in the... Hold on, we got another caller. It's Dave. Who's this?
Dave, this is Steve.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Steve, from where, my friend?
I'm from Tennessee.
Tennessee? You called in once before.
Yeah, we had a great conversation, you and I.
The accountant, yeah. Okay, go ahead.
A couple of things. I just heard you start talking about this report about the Dave Camp. They're going to get a vote. You know, this letter that came out from Rob Woodall,
uh-huh.
that they're going to get a vote in the Ways and Means Committee.
They're going to have a hearing in the Ways and Means Committee is what Dave Camp is telling his aides. Go ahead.
Well, because I asked his aides, and his aides had no idea what in the world they were talking about.
Really, I asked his aides, and his aides said that, he's saying they're going to have a hearing sometime in the next month.
Well, you know, which aide did you ask, did you speak to?
Mel Carter.
Mel Carter. Well, I'll call on Monday. I spoke to the council at that committee, and they had no clue as to what was going to happen. They had no idea whether there was going to be any vote or any hearing or any anything.
When was this?
This was obviously a week ago, and we checked all over the place. We checked with my congressman. We checked with Rob Woodall's office, and they didn't know anything. I mean, they just said something vaguely. Well, there's going to be some kind of something. His letter said a vote, okay. And you're saying Mel Carter is the guy. Is this in Dave Camp's office? Is his Ways and Means office or his own office?
He's in the Ways and Means office, and Mel Carter, I'm pulling that down from memory. I don't have my notes in front of me.
Okay.
Mel Carter.
Okay.
In the Ways and Means office. Not in Camp's legislative office.
Okay, because as I said, I called the people at the committee. You get the lawyers at the committee, the tax lawyers on Ways and Means Committee. And as of a week ago, they had no idea what anybody was talking about.
Well, okay.
I will call us. I mean, the only way I have to reach you is through this number, and it's on Saturday night, right?
We're on Saturday night. We're also on Monday night at 7.
Okay,
and
I called you. By the way, I called you last. I called. I think it was last Saturday, and there was no show. It was really strange.
Last Saturday there was a problem with the Blog Talk stream. If you're interested, go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and the actual archive show that I sat here and delivered for 2 hours that actually appeared to everyone else to be dead silence on the other end.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Good. No, I'm glad it wasn't just me. Okay. I will call the show again Monday. Okay. What is it? The same time on Monday, 8 o'clock?
It is Monday. Is it 7? Yeah, 8 o'clock your time. That's right. Yeah.
Okay. I will check on Monday with this guy. But so far we have struck out nobody. No, as I said, somebody got for me from Rob Woodall's office some vague generality about maybe having some.
Did you actually see a letter? Did you actually see a letter from Woodall's office?
Oh yes, sure did.
I didn't. Where did you? Is that online somewhere, or did you get it in the mail?
I got it because all the fair tax people are all whooping and hollering about this letter, and they're all going, you know, they're all getting crazed and worked up, and so
it's
all over the place.
Yeah, I didn't see the letter. I picked up some word of it.
A week ago.
Dave,
where can I send this to you if I find it? I'll go back and find it.
The letter?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. I'll meet you I'll go to break right now and meet you off air and give you my address.
Okay.
Or my email.
I'll tell you what. I think you can. Okay. All right. Okay. Good. Good. You'll give me your address and all. Yeah. That's great. That's great.
I'll just go to break right now and we'll talk off air.
Okay. Great.
Okay. All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Sure.
They told me that you had gone totally insane. And that your methods were unsound. Are my methods unsound? I don't see any method at all.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
September 15, 1787, the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia took up debate on whether or not to allow amendments to the new Constitution and, if so, what method of amending should be adopted. Initially, it was proposed that only the legislature could make an amendment. Quoting from James Madison's notes of that very day, Colonel Mason thought the plan of amending the Constitution exceptionable and dangerous, as the proposing of amendments is in both the nodes to depend in the first immediately, in the second ultimately, on Congress. No amendments of the proper kind would ever be obtained by the people if the government should become oppressive, as he verily believed would be the case. Unquote. There followed a strenuous debate and many propositions, motions, votes, and refinements that arrived at the article as it exists today.
Hello.
Giving states and the people the power to meet to amend the Constitution with no regard for the legislature or executive. The time that Mason foresaw,
hello,
the time of oppressive national government has arrived. Join us on,
hello,
Monday night in the Hour of Truth as we explore this method of peaceful revolution. We'll discuss how, when, and why. And we will be glad to hear your opinions on exactly what we need to do to fix the issues we face today, using Article 5 of the Constitution. Can we? Will we take our government by the horns, wrestle it to the ground, and return our republic to a government that serves the states and the people? Let's talk about it. Mondays, 7 p.m., the Hour of Truth. Call and participate on the studio line 347-677-1835.
I've got a feeling that the tide is turning. Is life so dear, or peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God! I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We are back after that kind of long break. I was talking to my buddy Steve offline. Steve's still here with us. Steve from,
yep,
Tennessee, the state that,
right,
the state that has no income tax, that survives,
right,
quite nicely on sales taxes, and has made itself ranked in the top five in the nation in both business growth and standard of living because of that. How's it going,
well,
down there, Steve, in,
yep,
Tennessee?
Well, everything's just fine here, and as we talked a little bit the last time we spoke, Dave, the fact is that Tennessee's doing great on a sales tax and no income tax, and several other states are doing the same. That's fine. That a state-based sales tax might work. It's one thing to pay 10% sales tax on half the things you buy, but a 40% sales tax on virtually everything you buy is a horse of another color, Dave.
My goodness gracious.
So don't get to think that a 10% sales tax in Tennessee and a 9% in Texas, don't think that can translate to the fair tax. Okay? It's a big mistake.
Oh, but it does.
9%,
it does
10%
is... It does transmit exactly to the fair tax. It does transmit exactly to the fair tax because that you know that 9% that you pay in Tennessee,
yeah,
shows back up in people's paychecks, doesn't it? Shows back up in people's paychecks as state tax that wasn't deducted from their earnings.
Well, it doesn't show up. Well, they have to take it out of their pay. Yes.
They don't take it out of their pay. They get it
right.
Paid
no, but they have right.
It.
They have to take that money that they get net pay and go buy spend 9% fair sales tax.
Exactly right. So they get to actually choose with that 9%.
No, I understand that, Art. What I'm saying to you, what I'm trying to say to you, Dave, it's bad enough when I go buy something that I see that 9.75% sales tax, it goes between 9.5% and 10%, depending where you live. But every time I go to a store, I get just a little bit ticked off at paying 9.75% sales tax.
Well,
on
let
me finish. On half the things I buy, Dave, under the fair tax, if I go to the store and I'm going to see it, I buy something and it's $100 on the shelf. And I go over to the sales clerk, and the sales clerk smiles and says, "Well, with sales tax, Steve, that'll be $140, 40% combined sales tax." Dave, we will have the second American Revolution. People will not put up with a 40% sales tax every single time they spend their hard-earned money. They will not stand for it.
We've done the math, and we've put the money back in the paycheck. I didn't interrupt you, Steve. We've done the math here, show after show. We've put the money back in the paycheck, and we've let people go out and buy what they want, and they end up with more money at the end of the year.
Dave, what I'm trying to tell you is your math. You know, it's just like any economic nonsense. It's great and it's theoretical. The arithmetic works. And you know something? The arithmetic might even work because on balance, this is supposed to just replace the tax you pay. So people might be just a few pennies ahead. But that's not the point. Because when you go to that store, Dave, and you see that 40% sales tax in your eyeball, people will go ballistic. They will not be happy. Oh, it's not costing me anymore. People will be outraged each and every time they take a buck out of their pockets. It's going to be 40% on everything you buy. Right now, you pay your state sales tax, like I pay 9.75%, on roughly half the things I buy. Now, this is 40% every single time I spend my money. And if you think that people are going to be saying, no, I'm not unhappy paying 40% sales tax. I'm happy because I'm freer. I only pay it when I feel like. Dave, I think that's naive and otherworldly. In real life, people are going to be aggravated, right? You know, every time they see that 40%, I think it's truly, forgive me.
Right now,
I think it's naive to think that
they're going to be any more aggravated than they are when they get their paycheck now and see half of their money ripped off and they didn't even get a choice on what to do with it.
Well, there we are. And by the way, every economics writer in the country who was not paid by the fair tax, okay, understands that people will be so outraged that tax evasion will go through the roof in this country. Nobody can estimate how high it's going to go. No one can estimate it because it's just going to be through the roof because people will be angry. You think the Boston Tea Party was something? Wait till you see what happens when people are faced with 40% every single time. Dave, I'm a student of people's reaction. I've dealt with taxpayers my whole life, okay? I was a tax advisor, and 1,000 years ago I did individual returns. But people react to taxes, and when they see that sales tax in their face, they will go ballistic. Now, that is my considered judgment after a lifetime of doing this stuff, and it is the judgment of every economist under the sun, who other than the people who are paid by the fair tax. So,
is that right?
You know,
every economist.
You know, so I guess we can differ because nobody can prove anything to you. But I'm like Dave. I'm like the doctor. You go to your doctor and he takes your blood test and he uses his judgment and his education and his experience, and he comes up with a value judgment to you. He says, if you keep doing this, you're going to drop dead. Okay, and that's the spirit I'm doing. I looked at this. I think people will go ballistic. The economists agree for their reasons. I really think you're kidding yourself to think that people are going to be, they're not going to be upset, they're going to be happy because they don't have to file a tax return. Until it is, they have to file a tax return.
Well, I challenge you that sure. every economist who isn't being paid by fairtax.org is saying exactly what you're saying now.
Well, every economist that I've read, perhaps there's somebody out there who doesn't, but every economist that I've read thinks that people will be unhappy and thinks that evasion will go through the roof, through the absolute roof.
And how do you evade it?
How do you evade it? I haven't begun to think how you evade this. This country will have the biggest black market in the history of the world. There will be thousands of ways in which
people will be selling cars on the street corner.
No, cars is something. The fair tax people always come back with cars. Cars is something you have to register. Food and most other things you don't have to register. Okay,
right.
And by the way, people will find a way to avoid the fair tax on cars as well.
Right next door to the Hy-Vee supermarket is going to be the no-tax supermarket, right? Is that the way it's going to work?
Not next door, but there will be black market supermarkets all over the place. Okay, uh-huh. Walmart, as a public company, won't cheat. That's probably true. But
right.
Walmart's prices are now going to be 25-30% higher, and there'll be farmers, there'll be markets, there are farmers markets all over the place. I had farmers markets in New York City. People mm-hmm. We will have black market sellers of everything under the sun. You know, the mob used to rob trucks and sell things off the back of a truck. We will have a nation of black marketeers. A nation of them.
Well, okay. Now let's take your farmer at the farmer's market.
Yeah.
He's going to sell without paying sales tax. So
right,
he's not going to register himself as a retailer with the federal government.
He might.
Right?
Might not. Maybe.
No. Well,
not,
I mean,
not.
If he does register himself as a retailer with the federal government, they're going to come after him for sales tax. So
yeah, well,
he's
you know,
not going to register
who?
Himself. He's not going to register himself as a retailer.
Well, I haven't spoken how he's going to do it. He'll register and he'll record some of his sales, and then he won't record other sales. He'll say I sold stuff to Walmart. You know, they'll find a way, Dave. You know, water finds its own level.
Let's get away from the nickel and dime farmers market guy, all right? Because the city of Nashville, Tennessee, isn't going to survive on the farmers market. All right, you've got your Hy-Vee and you've got your A&P and you've got your John Doe supermarket. I don't know what kind of change you have down there in Nashville, but right down the street from them, around the block, where do I get to go in Nashville to buy a week's worth of groceries without paying sales tax? Is there a place?
Dave, this market, this black market will develop. I don't know exactly how it's going to develop. People will do everything in their power to avoid paying this tax. I'm not planning to do it. I haven't sat down and figured out. Sit here. I'm gonna make up a scenario how I'm gonna do it. It's gonna happen. I know this much. I mean, that one thing. You know, I can't say that the Mexican border on the Mexican side. I think. Okay, you will have from Brownsville, Texas, to San Diego, California. You will have one long Mercado Mexicano with a big flashing sign that says "Bienvenidos Gringos." and people will be going over that border to buy stuff and coming back. People will, you know, a lot of Americans will retire in Mexico. We have a big American colony in Mexico right now. More Americans will retire to Mexico. They will.
You think?
You know, I can bet on it. We have a bunch of them right now because it's so cheap living there. And now when we add 30% to the cost of everything here, 25-30%, are you kidding?
Percent back in people's pockets. You keep saying that like we're adding 25-30% to the cost of things without. Right. I mean, it's a favorite anti-fair tax trigger. Argument to say we're going to charge people 25-30% more for things without saying we're putting 25-30% more back in your paycheck.
Oh no! I don't deny that I didn't say that and I don't deny it. What I'm saying to you is that the fact that I have more money in my pocket and enough to pay these taxes is still that's not the issue. The issue is I go into that store and it costs me 40%. On everything I buy, and I'm not going to be sanguine about it, Dave. I'm not going to be sanguine. People will be outraged.
People are outraged at paying taxes. Okay, now and again, we're gonna flash back to show number one some months ago. You know, taxes have to be paid. Okay,
yeah,
and people are outraged now at the taxes that they pay, and now you are talking about the amount of tax you pay, not how you collect the tax, all right? And that is a different argument, and we need to tackle that problem. We need to tackle the fact that the fair tax would, in fact, have to be 23%, where it we should be able to provide 23%. We should be able to survive with a fair tax, or we should be able to survive with an income tax in a constitutional government, if we're going to tax income, of about 6-7%.
I'm not sure what you just said. Let me go back a second. You keep saying 23%, Dave. Let's make sure the listeners understand. If something cost before fair tax $100,
correct.
The fair tax you add on is not $23. It's $30, and the
correct.
Total is $130. And
correct.
The place that you and fair taxers are getting that 23% is that you're telling us that we're wrong all our lives. We shouldn't divide 30 by 100. We should divide 30 by 130.
I think that's
cuckoo, and I think it has no financial sense whatsoever. But
wait,
that's for people to decide.
Wait a minute. I'm not telling you you're wrong. I'm telling you that the people who are opposed to the fair tax like to use the 30% number, and they are correct in doing so when they compare the way the fair tax is collected with the way the current sales tax is collected. It is a 30% tax. However, it's replacing the income tax. And when you say I pay 25% income tax, what you say is here's a chunk of money, 25% of it is tax. So
let's save time on this point, okay? Because I think this is a red herring. I just want people to understand. All I want is for people to understand that $100, you add $30, the total's $130, and I say that's a 30% sales tax, and you people say it's 23%. Let people decide which one of us is being straightforward and honorable about it, and let's move back on to other stuff. I think what we were saying is this. You think that this huge high sales tax, people should not be upset
be absolutely upset. I think they should be. In fact, I'm with you, Steve. I want them to be upset. I want people to be irate when they go in and pay this kind of sales tax and get faced with this kind of sales tax because currently all of the taxes that they're paying aren't making them irate enough. We need taxes to come down.
I'll take you at your word for that. Let's go a step further. Let's go a step further, Dave. Okay. You do know. I'm going to talk some practical stuff because I was a CPA and I'm going to be practical here. You do know that the fair tax, the economists make believe that in their calculation, they're trying to replace in 2007 dollars roughly $2.2 trillion worth of total taxes. You do know, Dave, that these economists, the fair tax economists, assume, they make two assumptions. They say they assume that nobody is going to cheat on the fair tax. There'll be no evasion. And they also assume, Dave, that nobody is going to react negatively and reduce their spending in reaction to this 40% sales tax. They think people will continue to spend as much as they did. There'll be zero reduction. Dave, listen, I don't know what planet they think that's going to happen on, but on this planet, the revenues are going to be short. So for the $2.2 trillion they're going to collect, they're going to be short 15, 20, 25, 30, some number that nobody can really calculate, okay? What do we do about the federal government having, first of all, they're spending roughly $3.8 trillion, something like that, and they're collecting $2.2 trillion, and now they're all of a sudden going to be short $400, $500, $600 billion.
What do you think we do about it?
I know what the government's going to do about it, Dave.
What are they going to do about it?
They're going to do two things. First thing they're going to do is they're going to take away the exemption for used property. Okay. The next thing they're going to do is take away the exemption for education expenses. The next thing they're going to do is there's an adjustment they made in the figures where in gross national product they have an income figure, a spending figure for the rental value of your home. So all of a sudden they're going to add the rental value of your home as subject to fair tax. And when those three are not enough, okay, they're going to have to raise that 30% rate. But you asked a great question, Dave. Let me tell you what I really think as well. They're going to have to raise that rate. I suspect, Dave, that they're not going to be overly upset about the revenues coming in short, because I think the thing that those characters in Congress really want is the following. When the revenues are short, they're going to turn to us and say, listen, people, we have no other choice, but we have to have a new income tax. And don't forget, we'll repeal Section 401, the sunset clause of the fair tax, and we'll have this new income tax. But don't you worry, it's only going to be those rich people who are not paying their fair share. It won't affect you people in the middle class. Right. Yuck, yuck, hold on to your wallet. That's what I'm really afraid will happen. But step one, they're going to remove some of these exemptions, and they have to raise the rate.
Okay.
There's nothing else for them to do. There's nothing, no other way for them to make this revenue up. They can hold it down, by the way, Dave. They could.
Wait now. I get a turn. It's my show,
sure.
So I get a turn.
Sure. Anytime, Dave.
I'm with you. I want, I would love for people to be extremely pissed off by the rate of tax that they pay. I would love to see the government try, once they get a fair tax in place, try to raise that fair tax. I would love to see people get pissed off about how much money the government is spending. And I agree with you 100%. In fact, that's where we were going with tonight's show, is with some of the serious problems in H.R. 25. We don't need H.R. 20. We need H.R. 25 out on the floor for an honest, open debate is what we need. There's some real problems with H.R. 25, and this ties into our Monday night show, which is an Article 5, which is a show about Article 5 and how we need to get that rolling.
Mm-hmm.
The fair tax needs to be instituted. Not before, but as an amendment to the Constitution, repealing 16 and replacing it.
Don't hold your breath for 16 to be repealed.
Well, I'm not holding my breath for the fair tax to be enacted myself.
I'm going to
keep breathing, but I'm going to keep pushing. Because it's the best thing. It would be the best thing that's happened to us in about 200 years.
Let me change the subject with you a little bit. Okay, tell me something. You think it's the best thing? Explain to me, Dave, why it is that you feel that we should expand welfare.
No, I don't feel we should expand welfare. Nor does the fair tax expand welfare.
I beg to differ.
Yeah, I know you beg to differ, and that's a favorite progressive argument for.
No, it's. Well, what's a progressive argument? Wait a minute. Mine is an anti-progressive argument.
No, yours is a progressive argument because you want to keep the income tax, which is a Marxist tax.
Dave, you're misrepresenting what I'm saying. Okay. What I'm pushing for, and I want to come back to the fair tax. What I'm pushing for is a flat income tax, 10% rate, no deductions, no exemptions, no credits, no nothing. And business income, there's no corporate tax. Business income is taxed to shareholders. Everybody's a subchapter S. So what I'm pushing is a flat tax, which is less progressive than the current income tax. That's what I'm pushing. The fair tax, David, and I know we didn't go through this last time, and it really is important. I've written something, and that's this. The fair tax is progressive in that it increases welfare. The fair tax makes sure that more poor people get a bigger welfare check out of the tax code than they did before. And you need to understand this. I'm sure you don't know some of this, so let me explain it to you. Under the fair tax, poor people do not pay any Social Security tax or Medicare tax.
Nor do rich people.
Wait a minute. Rich people pay Social Security and Medicare tax?
Under the fair tax, there's no Social Security or Medicare tax.
No, I understand. But the point is the rich guy, Dave, is paying a lot of fair tax.
Okay.
He is. The poor guy's paying nothing.
Paying no fair tax, right.
Right. So the fact that a rich guy pays no Social Security tax, but he's paying a ton of fair tax, the poor person pays no Social Security tax and no fair tax. Nothing.
Right.
So not only does a poor person pay zero towards the cost of the military, but that poor person pays zero for his own Social Security and Medicare. I mean, we've given Social Security and Medicare. This is part of the failed second Bill of Rights. I mean, what else are we going to give poor people? Are we going to give everybody a car and a house, and the government's going to come in and tuck them in at night? I mean, you're giving poor people pay nothing for Social Security and nothing for Medicare and nothing for fair tax, nothing towards the military. Now, besides paying nothing for all of that, Dave, my point is the fair tax gives them a big fat check on top of that. And I want to go through an illustration with you so you understand this. Now, do you know how the prebate works, how it's calculated?
Yes.
Okay. The fair tax goes to the underlying HHS tables, Health and Human Services tables, their poverty guidelines, and it makes some very nice adjustments to those tables because they're generous with your money, Dave. So I'm going to give you an illustration. I want to get my slide up here. I'm going to get you an illustration. Let's take a husband and wife with two kids.
Uh-huh.
And let's make believe that the wife's sister lives with them. Okay.
Okay.
So we have a five person household. Now, the fair tax, this family is deemed to spend. I'm at $42,510. Okay, that's what they're supposed to spend. Okay, Dave,
I'm with you.
Okay, now if that family spends $42,510, including fair tax, okay, that means that they paid fair tax of $9,777. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the fair tax makes believe that this family spends $42,510, and if they do spend that all at Walmart, they will pay $97.77, and the fair tax gives them every dime of that back. So they paid zero. Okay? Okay, step one. Part of what the fair tax gives these folks, $1,718 of that $97.77, in fact, is the fair tax tells us it's to cure the marriage penalty. To get rid of the marriage. Are you familiar with that one?
I'm familiar with the marriage penalty, yes.
Well, but you know that the fair tax helps people out by getting rid of the marriage penalty.
It does.
There's only one little problem, Dave. There is no marriage penalty. The tables under which this thing has been developed, the underlying tables, the HHS tables, are not done in terms of an adult and child. They're done in terms of first person and second person. The first person gets more money because the first person is supposed to take care of the rent. But it doesn't matter under the underlying tables whether the person's an adult or a child. the fair tax just make believe. They're going to make believe that the underlying tables say adult and child, and they make believe it says adult, and they say, well, we're going to fix it. We're going to make a two-adult family. So the fair tax just makes this up out of whole cloth and gives away $1,700 of your money. They don't. What do they care? Now, next, they put in this. I put in the sister. I gave an illustration of the sister. And the reason I put the sister in, right, the wife's sister lives with them. There's five people in the house.
Mm-hmm.
There's an extra $1,718 for the wife, for the wife's sister. Extra. More than they would get under the HHS tables, because it's a technical point, because the definition of a family under the fair tax is more generous. It's a very narrow definition, so that under the fair tax, you can have more than one fair tax family living in a single physical residence. So
sure you can.
They give away $1,718 extra for the sister.
You can't. Wait a second. But yeah. in reality, you can't have more than one family living in a residence.
No, that's what I'm saying, that in this physical household, the sister constitutes a separate family, and she gets a prebate of $2,642.
And this only happens under the fair tax, because in the real world, you can't possibly really have two families living in the same residence.
Sure you can.
Oh, okay.
Where'd you make that up from?
So the fair tax recognizes the real world, is what you're saying.
No. The fair tax recognizes
real world situations.
No. Let me state it this way.
Okay.
If that sister, okay?
Right.
That sister, if she were living in with this family and there was no fair tax, there was only an HHS tables, she was getting welfare under the HHS tables, they would only give her $925. But the fair tax gives her $2,642. The fair tax is more generous.
Oh, the sister's a deadbeat.
Whatever. No, it doesn't matter what she's a deadbeat or not. The sister lives in that household.
It doesn't matter whether she's a deadbeat, because you're trying to compare what she would get as a deadbeat to what she gets when she pays taxes.
No, Dave. It does not matter. Remember, the prebate doesn't care what you spend your money on. It just looks. The prebate is given to the number of people living in the household. And all I'm trying to say here is that if we had just the HHS guidelines, that it was no fair tax, that she would get, and they were poor, okay? That she would get $925. The prebate gives her $2,642, an extra $1,718. It just wants to give her more money, an extra $1,718.
Because she's a deadbeat.
Whatever. I mean, I'm saying that it's call them poor. If she was entitled to an HHS payment,
okay. She would get
$925.
Right.
Under the fair tax, she gets $2,642.
Okay.
An extra $1,718. The fair tax is more generous than the underlying table.
Right.
There's another one that the fair tax people admit to this one. The reduction to actual. You know, these when they say that the family pays X dollars, they don't mean they pay X dollars. They say what it says is, like, for example, this family of five, they're in poverty if they spend between zero and 42,510. It's not that every family of five has 42,510, and not every family of five gets 42,510. So let's just say, for fun's sake, that this family actually had to spend in the first place $3,000 less than the 42,510. If they actually had $3,000 less to spend, the fair tax makes believe they spent another $3,000 more than that. They just make believe. And they give them $690. I have three more categories. If this family is poor and they're on welfare, getting this 42,510 in welfare, they don't get the whole thing in a check and go into Walmart and buy stuff. A substantial part of welfare today is in-kind services, the biggest one being Medicaid, and another one being in-kind services for low-income housing allowance. The people don't get a check and pay rent. They pay either zero or a very small rent. So let's say $6,000 of what this family has is in-kind services. They don't pay fair tax on that $6,000. You and I do, Dave. But the fair tax makes believe that the state gives these people $6,000 and these people pay the doctor. That's nutsy. They didn't do it. They don't have the they don't get cash. They just show their card. They show their Medicaid card. So that's another $1,380 of fare tax that the fare tax reimburses these people for tax that we paid. The last two categories you understand. Used goods. The fare tax makes believe that people, poor people, will buy everything new, when we know, in fact, they'll buy some stuff used. But the fare tax makes believe everything they buy is used. New. And finally, the black market. We know that the people will spend some money in the black market. And yet, the fare tax makes believe they spend it all at Walmart, which won't cheat. Now, in this illustration, I made up numbers. I mean, this is just an illustration. But this family is getting a check for $9,777, and these people only paid under $2,000 in fare tax. The fare tax gives them a check for $7,800 more, Dave, than they pay in fare tax. Now, it may not be $7,800, it may be $6,800, it may be $5,000. There's some huge number between all these several things, the marriage penalty, the extra family, the reduction to actual, the in-kind welfare, used goods, black market. Between these six things, people are not going to pay that full $97.77 in fare tax. So I want you to understand, my friend, the fare tax check that we're going to give those people will far, far, far exceed any fare tax they pay. And this exposes the fare tax lie that the only thing it's trying to do is make sure that the poor people don't pay a single dollar in tax, which I don't think is a good thing anyway. But this goes way, way beyond making sure that they pay zero fare tax. This makes sure that they get a big fat check on top of any fare tax they're paying. This family, then in my illustration, came out with $7,800 in their pocket extra. Now, if you want to give that to them, that's your business. I'll defend to the death, Dave, your right to give every dollar of yours to the poor person of your choice. But I'll also fight you to the death if you think you're going to steal my money and give it to the poor person of Nancy Pelosi's choice.
Right. So basically,
This is what the prebate does, David. It gives away more welfare, and I'm dead set against it.
So basically, then, your argument is against welfare in general.
No. I don't like. No, take it a step at a time. I don't like welfare in general, but
we can't take it a step at a time because you've taken about 14 steps there. You know, you've gone
When I say take it a step at a time, Dave, what I mean is this.
Okay.
I don't like welfare in general, but there's no reason in the universe that this fare tax has to increase welfare. I don't want one dime. If anything, I'd like to get a reduction in welfare, but I don't want one dime of increase in welfare. And the fare tax has no business increasing welfare. Under my flat tax, okay, we get rid of refundable tax credits, which is welfare. We cut it back a little bit.
Who's the last president to actually decrease welfare?
Off the top of my head, Dave, the last president who was forced by a Republican Congress to do that was Bill Clinton.
Okay.
Okay.
How'd they do that? How did they reduce welfare?
I need your help here. But from my recollection, what they did was they instituted several things in welfare. They instituted the requirement that people go to work. And secondly, they made welfare temporary. They reduced it. They stopped the lifelong thing, and they made them lot more temporary. And those two, Dave, those two things had the effect. I understand in some states the welfare rolls were virtually eliminated over time.
Yes,
people got off their butts and got to work. People got off their butts and went to work, but slowly. Especially Obama has been taking away these work requirements. He says, no, you don't worry. You don't have to work. And the welfare rolls are growing like crazy. So now I don't know what point you're trying to make, but what relationship that has to do to this tax thing here. But I think we're going off topic. But you tell me what the relationship is.
I hate the last presidential, you're right. He was forced to do it. The last president – who reduced welfare was Bill Clinton, and he reduced welfare by putting people to work.
Now, he didn't put them to work. He said that you don't get welfare if you don't go to work.
Thank you. Okay. He reduced welfare by putting people to work.
No, he didn't put it. He forced people. He said, you've got to work. You can't get – if you don't work, if you don't get a job, we're not going to give you welfare. He didn't give them jobs.
Period. Unemployment went down during that period. I mean real unemployment, not the made-up unemployment number like we have now.
Right.
Real unemployment went down during that period.
Right.
Okay. So if the fair tax were a tax that would put people to work, would that reduce welfare?
You know something? No. First of all, you make believe, not you say make believe, you believe, Dave. And people just believe that the fair tax is going to make wonderful economic growth and we'll have jobs and we'll have trillions of dollars come home. I think that's a lot of malarkey, okay?
Well,
I don't believe it's going to spark our economy. But the other part of that you're missing is this, Dave, that I believe you're missing, okay?
Yeah.
It's not the there's a lot of people today, Mike Huckabee, one of your heroes, I'm sure, said this. The average welfare benefit is $40,000 and the average wage is $30,000. People have no incentive to get off their butts and get a job.
Mm-hmm.
That's why the thing worked when Clinton was forced to sign the welfare laws, that when you say to people, you must get a job or else we're not going to give you welfare, they just say, okay, enough of this welfare. I've heard that said right now, that if we put the work requirement right now, a lot of people would just drop off because they don't want the hassle. They'll support themselves somehow. There's people who don't want to work because welfare is too easy. You're not going to attract them because if there's any – I don't think there's going to be the economic boom that you think, and I don't think that's going to undo welfare. You think the poor people are sitting there and they're just dying to work. Well, from everything that I've seen, that's utterly untrue, Dave. Utterly untrue. I've got people here telling me. I have a guy telling me he's got people, a landscaper. He says, I can give people unskilled labor, $10 an hour, 60 hours a week. Can't find anybody who wants to do the work. Welfare is too easy, Dave. That's the problem. That's the problem, my friend. And we're, not that we're getting off the topic, but the point is there's no excuse, Dave, for the fair tax to add $1 to welfare, not one. It at a minimum, it should keep it no more welfare. If anything, it should reduce welfare. But there's no business. The fair tax has no business increasing welfare, as according to, like the illustration I just showed you, not one dime more. No excuse, no reason for it. That's my point.
Okay. So we got this family here, family of a husband and a wife and two kids,
yep,
and a sister living with them. And I guess do they not work at all?
No, it doesn't matter.
Do they earn any money at all?
I don't know. It doesn't matter. I just made up a number. They can work and they cannot work. If they're working for this, you know, for some of this money. For some part of it, they're also getting, besides the $7,800 benefit, they're also getting free Social Security.
No, they're not getting free Social Security.
So they get more if they're working for some of it.
It's crazy. I mean, when we do our exercises here, and I don't know how many of these shows you've heard, but when we do our exercises, we use real situations. We don't just throw it out. I mean, we know that this mother of two children works 40 hours a week for minimum wage. When we do a mathematical exercise here, I mean, I need to know if this family earns $60,000 a year or not.
Well, Dave, you know, if you want to, I can go any specific example. What all I did here was to illustrate the different ways in which the prebate overpays a family. Okay,
if this family earns $60,000 a year, they're not being overpaid.
You have to construct a specific illustration to see how it affects any individual family.
You have to $60,000 four people families, and we've done it with a single mother with two kids. I mean, we've done it in nickels and dimes,
Dave, you have to do it specific. If you're taking a family of four, then you have to work with what the fair tax thinks is spending. To illustrate the effect of the fair tax, you have to understand what, let's say a family of four is deemed to spend $31,020. Now, you can do two examples. One, a family on welfare getting 30, and two, a family earning that kind of money. But you have to. But there's a couple of even other things beneath that. When you have to take the family on welfare, you have to say how much, you know, you have to understand that they may not be getting the full $31,020. If their state is following the HHS, you have to get in more depth. You have to understand.
I don't have to go into more depth. I've got a family of four.
Yeah.
And how much money are they earning?
Well, pick a number.
$60,000. Family of four.
Let me see if I can do something. Okay. So what now? Okay. So $60,000. Okay. Now what do you want to do?
Spend them.
They spend it all. They spend it all. Okay. Now, by the way, it's not this welfare family.
Right.
Okay. All right. Now, okay, let me see now.
I mean,
now,
you're doing an exercise right now that we did 4 weeks ago on the show. So.
Well, okay, so they get a prebate of $7,135, okay?
Okay, a year.
A year, right. Now, see, the reason you're making this tough because they're earning over the poverty level.
Ah.
They're earning over the poverty level. So for one thing, 7135. So let's see what happens here. Now you got to tell me, Dave. You got to tell me how much money. So they're getting no welfare.
They're getting. Oh yeah, no, they're getting no welfare. They earn $60,000 a year. I mean, they're an average American family of four. They earn $60,000 a year.
Well, okay. By the way, you know that Octomom was making a couple of hundred thousand, and she was still getting welfare.
Fine.
Okay, so what you're saying here is you've assumed away a whole lot of things here, but in any event, tell me how much they're spending on used goods.
Family of four.
Okay, tell me how much they're spending on used goods and how much they're spending in the black market, Dave.
I don't know.
you got to make up a. What's that?
Well, let's say there isn't. Let's say they're spending. $4,000 a year on. Well, let's buy them a used car. Let's say they're spending $12,000 a year on
how much
used goods. $12,000 on used goods and
okay. And how much in the black market?
Black market. $12,000 a year. Let's say $12,000 a year untaxed.
Wait. Just $12,000 total?
Yeah, untaxed.
Okay. Well, you see, you're making things complicated all right.
You're trying to make things complicated. You're building this great big black market where they go down the street and they buy all their damn groceries from some guy that is in turn paying sales tax on all of the stuff that he sells already sold them because he's not a registered retailer.
Say that again.
The guy that. Never mind. That's a different discussion. You're building this great big black market that doesn't and can't exist.
Well, okay? Dave, if you think the black market won't exist, then that's your belief system. I think in the real world there'll be a giant black market. You know something, Dave? There's black markets today. I meet people here paying like right across the line. I've met people all around. First of all, there's black markets right now because people are avoiding you know a 7 to 10% state and local sales taxes. When it's 40%, I know they're going to go ballistic.
How are they avoiding the local sales tax?
I know for now it's internet purchases, but I know people who are just buying for cash.
That's an open market.
But at the same time.
That's not a black market. Going across the state line to buy your cigarettes isn't a black market.
People buy black market cigarettes. They buy black market gasoline. This guy was buying. He's buying for cash from local farmers. So as not to avoid his state 8% sales tax. I mean, people are doing it now.
Well, sure they are.
And you think they're not going to do it when you think they're not going to do it when it's 40%? I think that's unrealistic.
But what you're trying to do is you're trying to tell me that this quote-unquote black market is going to explode.
Absolutely.
No, it's not going to explode. There's not going to be a grocery store. I mean, you're trying to draw this picture in people's minds of a grocery store that you walk into and buy all your groceries without paying.
I don't know if it's going to be a walk-in place. There will be some walk-in places. There will be farmers. There will be trucks. People will find a way to buy stuff without paying fair tax.
If a guy sets up a kiosk downtown where he sells neckties and doesn't charge sales tax, then the sales tax was paid on those neckties when he bought them.
Listen. He's going to get him, okay? When the mob sold stuff off, they didn't pay sales tax. They just stole it.
Okay, so what you're saying then is that there's not only going to be an increase in black market, there's going to be an increase in organized crime as we start hijacking trucks full of suits.
Just black market goods, untaxed goods will find their way into this country and into the hands of sellers, and people will find a way to buy it. By the way, I'm going back to your numbers here. This family is going to pay about $11,000 in fair tax, okay? Dave?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yep, you're $60,000 with $12,000 untaxed. They'll pay $11,000, so they spend $48,000 paying fair tax. They'll pay $11,000 in fair tax. Now, that's more than the $71.35 they spent, but what you've set up is just an artificial thing, because the fact is which was the untaxed, okay? The fact is that you're making a tough illustration because you're not using the numbers that deal with
a tough illustration. What I've done, Steve, is I've taken the average American family of four, $60,000. The average American family of four, $60,000. All right. What you've done is you've taken and set up some family somewhere, and you've thrown in a sister, and they're all deadbeats. And that's not the average American family of four.
Dave, we have 48 million. We have half the people on welfare. Over 48 million people on welfare.
48 million people on welfare aren't 48 million people who don't want to go work. All right? I'm unemployed, and it's not by choice.
Yeah.
All right?
Listen, what you're doing here, Dave, is because you're saying that people – I don't know what your point is. The fact is that this family would pay more fair tax than they're getting back in prebate, but they're not – you know, the theoretical question here is, what do you do with the $12,000? Do you put the $12,000 against the $31,020 or against the amount in excess of that? It's the way you look at it. The fact that these people are paying more fair tax than they're getting in prebate – does not prove that you're right. It proves that this family, it depends where you put that $12,000 into which of the two baskets, the first $31,020 or the second $29,000.
Okay. let me tell you, Steve.
Yeah.
Right now, you are preaching. You are preaching to an audience.
Yes.
Right here, that is tired of working and being taxed by the federal government.
Yeah.
Based on their productivity, and who is the average American family that makes $60,000 a year and buys a used car once in a while.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking to the family that I drove, that I drew you. You're not talking to the family that you drew.
And what is it? And what is it supposed to be saying to these folks? That what?
What is supposed to be saying
those people,
to these folks,
Dave,
is,
those people who are making $60,000 a year. Those people should be pissed as hell that they're giving more welfare to people who are not working.
No. They should be happy. They should be happy that now they have control of their productivity. They have control of their income. And the United States government has no business knowing what they make or what they have.
Dave, you know, something that's another part of, it's a, just another aspect of which, you know, I don't know if we went through this the last time, but you don't understand, under the fair tax, Section 101D, you, Dave, the buyer of goods, these people who want their privacy, they are personally liable to pay the fair tax. Section 101D says that, unless they paid the tax to a seller and that they have a that they received a receipt. Now, Dave, how is the IRS, the new IRS, going to know whether they got a receipt?
They have to ask. There's no new IRS.
What's that?
There's no new IRS.
Dave, it's called the Sales Tax Administration Authority.
Okay.
The
All right. There's no new IRS. Right.
Well, I'm calling it. I'm calling. People don't know the STAA. It's the new IRS known as the STAA. That they're not going to say, well, gee, I guess I'll look into the Ethernet and I'll guess that Dave paid his fair tax. No, the statute says you have to have received the receipt, and what that means, in the only common sense way to make of that, is the fact that you have to be able to produce that receipt. The new IRS, the STAA, is going to have to, if they're going to protect the revenue. Okay, if I was the new commissioner and I was tasked with protecting the revenue, I have to come to your house, Dave, and ask you not only to produce those receipts, but, you know, because if you produce $2,300 in receipts, all that tells me is you spent $10,000. Dave, what I need to know, if I'm going to protect the revenue, what I need to know from you is how much did you spend in total on taxable purchases? In order to understand from you how much you spent in taxable purchases, I need to know what your receipts were and what your disbursements were in total. And so I'm going to ask you to fill out a little pre-audit questionnaire. Line one is going to say list total receipts. And if there's a from several sources, give me a schedule, okay? And by the way, Dave, give me, you know, make my I need to check this, so give me copies of all of your records, your bank statements and your brokerage statements and whatever you got, so I can check out your total receipts. On line two, put down the total of exempt purchases used and how much you saved. And again, you got to give me full receipts for everything. And by the way, I don't know if you know this, Dave, but you have to have a if you're claiming something's used, you're going to have the sales tax receipt to show that the guy who sold it to you paid fair tax. And if you don't, it doesn't qualify as used. Okay. So line one minus line two is line three, which is total fair tax, total purchases subject to fair tax. Line 4 is 23% of line 3. Line 5 is all the receipts that you can produce, Dave. And line 6 is the balance, line 4 minus line 5. And I'll add line 6, 7, and 8, interest, penalties, and the total tax due.
What's the number of this form that we can all go look it up?
Well, there is no form. It's good.
You just made it up.
Dave. I've spent my whole life in tax and in auditing. For me, and I'm saying to you, if I was given the job of protecting the revenue, this is what I have to tell my agents to do. We have to be able to ask this of you, and in the next year, that little form that I send to you to fill out is going to be sent to everybody to file once a year. You got to give me that information, and I'm going to know everything about every dime of your finances. And that's not going to prevent fraud, Dave. That's only going to hold it down.
That's a form that you've made up, Steve, because you've spent your life making a living on the income tax system.
Dave, that's irrelevant.
It isn't irrelevant. It's very relevant. It's very relevant.
Dave, you're not listening. If I'm the commissioner, if my job is to protect the revenue, okay, mm-hmm. I have tasked with – because the statute, Section 101D – gives me the authority to audit you, Dave. It tells me you're liable, and that's all I need. And then it's my job to figure out how to audit you. And using common sense as an auditor, this is what I have to do.
See, I'm not liable, though.
Which are
you? Get it?
Dave, did you read Section 101D?
I did.
And what does it say?
It says that the buyer needs
yes.
to know that what he bought is used.
No, Dave, you're reading the wrong section. Section 101D says this. You, Dave, the buyer of goods, of any goods, new goods, Oh, no, okay. The buyer of any goods, not just used goods, new goods. You, Dave, the buyer of any goods, are liable to pay the fair tax on those goods.
Correct.
Unless that's 101D1. 101D2 says you can avoid your liability, Dave Gort, if you paid the fair tax to the person who sold it to you, and you got a receipt. That's what it says. You know, okay. you know what a use tax is, don't you? Like it's just like any state's use tax. You are liable, okay? If you bought goods and you didn't pay fair tax on it, you owe the goods. You owe the fair tax.
So what it says. So what that section says is when I go to the grocery store, I get a receipt.
Yeah.
Okay. When I go to the flea market, I get a receipt.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it means that I can ask you to produce it.
No, it doesn't mean that.
Dave?
It doesn't mean that.
Dave,
it doesn't
are you a tax guy, Dave? Are you a tax professional, Dave?
No, I'm not.
I was, okay? That section, 101D, opens the door to you being liable. You are liable for this tax to prove that you paid this tax.
Okay.
And that section 101D is all I need as the new commissioner of the sales of the STAA. It's all I need to audit you.
Okay. So what we've agreed to is HR 25 has some serious problems, which is where we were, where we started tonight's show, right? HR 25.
Well, I think HR 25 is fatally flawed. I mean, it's not just it has some problems that we can fix with a little screwdriver here, Dave. Okay.
I think
by the way, this one thing,
flawed.
This one
that's
thing is just is such
tonight,
a common.
Sir.
What's that?
I think HR 25 is fatally flawed. That's where we started tonight's show.
Okay, I must have missed that. I think I missed the first 2 minutes. Well, so then, what are you pushing?
I'm pushing the fair tax.
But that, Dave, I know we had this conversation last time. The fair tax is HR 25.
I am pushing a consumption tax. Call it what you want. Okay, I'm pushing a national consumption tax to replace all the other taxes.
Okay, now.
Okay, so
let's get this straight, Dave.
You can get away from the title if you want, but it is
okay, it's not the fair tax. You're not pushing HR 25. You agree that it's fatally flawed. You're not pushing HR 25, and you're not putting which is the fair tax. You're pushing something else, a generic consumption tax.
Okay, tax to replace.
Okay, now
tax.
before I'm going to tell you before I ask you to think about what the specifics of that are, okay? I need to know what the specifics are. But the fact is this. Let me explain something here. You know the name Dale Jorgensen?
Yes.
Okay, Dale Jorgensen, Harvard economist. He was paid by the fair tax people. He said, in trying to replace these three taxes, the fair tax takes on far too great a burden for it to carry. It's a consumption tax sounds nice. But it can't carry replacing all these three taxes, even without a prebate, Dave. Okay, it's just too much. So instead of a 40% in your face sales tax, it'll be a 35% sales tax in your face. It's still outrageous. It's a nice idea, but what I'm going to have to ask you then, Dave, I'm really glad we had this conversation. What I need you to say, I need you to come back with, and maybe next time, is tell me precisely. I mean, I can't fight thin air. Tell me precisely what the aspects of your national sales tax are, and how it differs from HR 25.
Okay, I mean we can do that. I mean
useful. That would be very helpful.
In the first place, the fatal flaw of HR 25 is that it doesn't amend the Constitution.
It can't. The Constitution can't be amended by a single statute.
So it's fatally flawed. That's the fatal flaw of HR 25.
Oh, but you don't think the prebate is a fatal flaw?
The prebate is not a fatal flaw.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, you don't think that this thing about Dave Court are personally liable to pay fair tax? You don't think that's a fatal flaw?
That's a serious flaw. Yes, there are serious flaws in HR 25, and we were scheduled to go over those tonight, and we're going to wind down here. I promised everybody that we were only going to be here an hour tonight, and I'm late for an appointment right now. But
okay. Well, okay. So you're saying the fatal flaw is that it doesn't amend the Constitution, and it can't.
Yeah, it doesn't even. Well, you're right, and so it's fatal. A national consumption tax can only be introduced as an amendment to the Constitution.
Well, okay. So let's just get straight. You are not supporting HR 25, the fair tax.
I've never supported HR 25.
Okay, well, but that's what you've been talking about all the time. Okay. You don't support the fair tax, and what I need to hear is exactly what it is that you're supporting. Exactly what is the terms of the consumption tax that Dave Court is pushing?
Okay, well, I mean it's very much laid out in the fair tax. I mean it is a 23% consumption tax.
Yeah.
And it does have a prebate.
Yeah. Same prebate?
I don't have any problem with the prebate table. I don't have any problem with the prebate table.
So we just went through the adding to welfare, but you don't care.
No, you just went through the adding to welfare.
Yeah, but I explained it, how I got it.
And it didn't make any sense to anyone. It didn't make any sense to anyone. You created this family and completely ignored the average American worker.
Well, I'm talking about a low-income family. I'm not talking about the average person. I'm talking about a low-income family.
Okay.
And you want to ignore low-income families.
I don't want to ignore low-income families. I want to make sure that low-income families don't get charged tax for the necessities of life.
Yeah, but you're also saying I'm going to give those low-income families a big fat check on top of that. As I just took you through.
No, you didn't take me through a low-income family. Let's take that 60. Well, next time we'll take that 60,000 down to 30,000.
No, okay, fine, but I gave you a five-person family that the fair tax believes that these people spend $42,510, but the underlying HHS tables think that that they would pay a maximum of $27,000. The fair tax just gives them an extra $15,000 worth of spending.
Okay, we can deal with this We can deal with this all next Saturday night. I've got to go.
Okay.
We're gonna call it a night.
And think about exactly then to this way, Dave. Tell me, think about exactly how what you're proposing differs from HR 25, the fair tax. So far, you've told me it includes most everything in fair tax.
It does. It does.
Okay, so how would it differ?
Fair tax. I don't have a problem with that. It differs. It differs in that it's a constitutional amendment. It differs in all of the. What is it, 17 paragraphs on 9 pages that have to do with federal enforcement.
Which 17 pages, Dave?
I didn't come prepared to discuss that particular thing with you tonight. So we'll be ready for that next Saturday night.
Yeah, no, tell me what you're talking about so I can look at it myself too.
Well, I can't give you.
Okay, great.
Right now. I mean, you just called in tonight, and I was glad to take your call, and that's fine. But yeah. I wasn't ready to discuss this with you.
Okay. No, that's fine, Dave. That's fine. That's great. I mean, it's great that you did. I didn't even know if you were going to be on. Remember, I started trying on last week, and there was nothing there, so I didn't know what to expect tonight. But okay. So basically, you're saying so far the fair tax plus but as a constitutional amendment. That's your. And my whole point is that that constitutional amendment aside, the fair tax itself has incredible flaws. But all right, let's do it next week.
Okay, we can do that next week.
Great, and I'll check this thing Monday, Dave, and I'll get back to you.
Thanks to our buddy Steve, the guy from Tennessee that survives on no income tax, a state that's placed itself well up in the American. Hierarchy of states by not taxing people's income and by taxing consumption. And we thank Steve, our tax accountant, and we'll talk to him again next Saturday night. This is Dave. Good night from Missouri Grassroots Radio. Thanks for tuning in.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.
Mom!